Welcome back to the Let Me Take You Higher podcast. Today, we're diving into the world of politics, focusing on one of the most high-profile figures in the game, Vice President Kamala Harris. We'll be exploring her policies, their impact, and I'm excited to have our special guest, political correspondent, Jagazis, here to help us break it all down. So let us get into the nitty-gritty and see what makes Kamala Harris tick and if her policies are the right policies for America going forward. So sit back and relax. You just entered the Let Me Take You Higher zone. Welcome back to Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Villain, and today we've got a political buffet lined up for you, straight from the post-debate kitchen of Kamala Harris herself. And as always, I'm joined by our special guest, Jagazis, who's ready to help us serve up some sizzling hot takes on her freshly cooked policies. Jagazis, are you there?
Yes. And you know, Mr. Villain, there's nothing like post-debate promises to fill you up and then leaving you wondering why you're still hungry.
We're always hungry in America. I mean, if you think about it, America likes to be full of policies and no way to get there. No, I'm just kidding. Harris is a remarkable candidate, guys. And I suggest you, if you haven't already, figure out if you can vote. I think the deadline, I believe, is in October, but we'll get some more information to that later on in the show. But let me just say, well, we're all about to dig in and see if these policies are going to make life better for regular Americans, or if it's just more political leftovers, right? Buckle up, because we're about to take you higher into the world of politics. So let's start off by this, because, you know, I think that, just let it all out there, I think we both are big Kamala Harris's fans. I just want to let our listeners know that we do this because, not just so people can vote and understand the policies like we do, but we want to give you, just like Tay-Tay did, Taylor Swift, the ability to understand how it's going to affect you and to let you know that it's worth your while to get involved for no matter what candidate you choose, right? So Kamala Harris's first policy is healthcare for all Americans. It sounds super grandiose because we've been saying this for a very long time. Let's start with Kamala's big pitch, though. Universal healthcare. Now, Harris says her plan will cover everyone, but there's the twist. It's going to take a decade to fully roll out. So basically, we'll have flying cars before we have affordable checkups.
What do you think
about that, Jagazis?
Jesus. Well, I mean, by the time that it's ready, my grandkids will be explaining TikTok 3.0 to me.
Well,
I'll be waiting around, just like waiting to make an appointment. You know, it's a long time. I might die before then.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, Obama was the first since FDR to trigger this waterfall notion that everybody in America could have healthcare and it could be considered a right. And I think how, from what I hear, Kamala wants to take that ball, well, basically Obama and Biden's ball, and keep running the healthcare playbook. Do you think this is a healthy way for Americans to get involved in their own healthcare? Do you believe that healthcare should be a right to all Americans?
Yes, full stop, the end. No, but I mean, like, there's only so many things in this life that we have a right to. And I think a right to being alive is probably the most basic of them.
It is.
I would go further and say, I think you should have a right to housing. You should have a right to food. You should have a right to healthcare. Like, the basic necessities that keep people alive should be required. But I understand how people get all weird about the housing thing. And people even get weird about food, which is really weird. Even when it comes to, like, kids' lunches being free so that your children don't starve, they get weird about it.
Don't want to starve.
But see, I don't understand how they are against that. But at the very least, we should all agree that you have the access, or at least the possibility, to pursue your health. I mean, if we have this in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, that we have a right to the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
Pursuit of happiness includes pursuing medical treatment so that you don't die.
Well, unfortunately, and I understand that, and you made up a good point, that in the Constitution says you have the right to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say, though, we have the right to health care. And since we have six...
Can you be happy if you're dying? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think since we have these six ultra-conservative Supreme Court individuals, we won't go into their names, but since they're on the docket and they are textualists, they're going to read it in the fact that we don't have the right to healthcare. I guarantee it. So I would tell you.
But they're only originalists when they think that it's, like, on their side. As soon as they, like, don't like something, then the originalist argument goes out the window. Like,
that's true. The Supreme Court is on the actual ballot too, guys. Remember that. So when we're talking about this, understand that universal healthcare sounds great, but who's going to pick up the tab? You can't tell regular Americans, don't worry, healthcare is coming, while they're downing in medical debt today and gas prices are a little bit out of control, inflationary risks are there. So how do we sell this to Americana?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that, unfortunately, like, it is flashy. It's flashy enough to get a headline, but it's one of those things that people don't fully understand the impact of until it happens. And like you said, it's going to take about 10 years, maybe more. Roll out and actually see those effects. Yeah. So it's not like people are going to wake up tomorrow and everything's going to be fixed. And that makes it really hard, because even if it does take 10 years, and even if Kamala was to do two terms, we wouldn't see the effect of this until she's out of office. So it's going to look like, quote unquote, she didn't do enough as a president, even though a decade from now, the world might look completely different.
It's going.
So we have to kind of sell that vision of the future. Mm-hmm. That vision of, like, we're setting it up. You mentioned how the Supreme Court is on the ballot as well. We have to really drive home this fact that, like, what the president touches is not an overnight fix, but it's about the greater wealth and prosperity of us as a people, as a nation down the line, even if you don't see it right away. You might be focused on gas prices today, but what is that president going to do to get rid of the dependence on oil in the next decade? We need to focus on the long-term goals, not dying from global warming. Like, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but we need to start with the president's decisions today.
Yeah.
And she's the one who's bringing policies to make that happen.
Right.
Even if she doesn't get the credit, she's a person. Cool.
Yeah. And you're right with, and that's absolutely right. Cause you remember the Affordable Care Act started about a decade ago, and we're just now getting to, I believe it's 40 million subscribers to the Health Care Act that Obama started, Obama and Biden, called Obamacare, started about almost a decade ago, over a decade, actually. So it's going to take time. You're not going to see it. I mean, the CHIPS Act, that's another thing that you won't see, but until over time. I know I live in Texas, in Georgetown. South Korea just is building this massive plant out here that's probably the size of a city. It's going to have like Taco Bell in it, freaking McDonald's. They're building chips, semiconductors. I mean, you could drive through this like a highway. It's crazy huge. But we're not going to see what it's going to do for Americans' AI, supercomputers for another 5, 6, 10 years.
But even if you ever see it, how many people are actually looking at semiconductors and like where their chips are coming from? They could put it in every brand new iPhone tomorrow, and people will just buy the iPhone not knowing how it's made. So like, these are things that affect the economy and jobs and our dependence on tariffed freaking imports. If Trump was to come in, he wants to put a across the board tariff on every single import, which would then be passed on to American people.
Don't let anybody tell you anything
different. Don't let anyone tell you different. If you're going to say, oh, to import this, you're going to have to raise the price from $5 to $10. That makes the landed price $10 now, and they're going to have to make a 50% margin. That product that was $10 retails now $20. Because they have to pass on the imported custom tax into the price of the item. Yeah. Tariffs are a tax on the people. No matter what Trump says, he just doesn't know what tariff means, I guess.
Yeah.
That drove me wild in the debate. The fact that he's like, oh, it's not what a tariff is. You don't know what a tariff is then, bro. Every single item when he put in the Chinese tariffs went up. Steel went up.
And they're going to continue to go up. And that's how you get what's called a trade war.
Oof. Cars went way up.
Yeah, everything, man. How are you going to put 100% on EVs from China? You know what they're going to do? Whatever they give us, they're going to put 100% tariff tax on that. And it's going to be stuff we really need, like baby formula, diapers. That's what a tariff war is. That's what a trade deficit war is. And we're already in it. But moving gingerly along, Kamala Harris's policy number two, climate change combat plan. So what it means. So next up, Kamala's climate change initiative. It's all about transitioning to clean energy, and she's promising to cut emissions drastically by 2035. But I gotta ask, where's the plan for the guy in Michigan? Even where's the plan for the guys in Pennsylvania? Who just bought a diesel truck? Do we just tell him, hey buddy, that was a bad investment? What do you think, Jagazis?
Yeah, I mean, especially if somebody just bought up a brand new gas-powered vehicle and they're going to be doing all these things in terms of tax cuts and just more infrastructure for electronic vehicles, it's like you made a bad investment. But at the same time, is it like it's going to take, like you said, a decade for that to happen? By that time, you're going to need a new car anyway, my bros. Yeah. So don't be too worried about it. We're gonna get there eventually, but like I mentioned earlier, you have to have a president who's willing to put those plans into motion, and we will slowly adapt to it. And we'll slowly see the change.
Yeah.
No one's coming to knock on their doors and like put a boot on their car. Yeah. Say, sorry, you can't drive anymore, you gas guzzler.
Now, I'm a liberal Democrat. Most of you may know that. I used to be all about EVs, electric, this, blah, 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 blah. But I have a classic car that I don't want to say it's a gas guzzler, but it's not the most gas friendly car as not my primary car, of course, thank goodness. But it kind of had me thinking, like, am I the problem? I'd be the problem.
Am I the villain?
Yeah, I'm not the problem. I'm not. But and let's not forget, clean energy jobs are great, but what happens to the people working in the fossil fuel industry, like coal? You can't just replace a coal miner with a wind farm and expect everyone to start spinning turbines to create energy. So what do we do? Some of these people have been doing generations worth of this kind of work. How do we get them well accredited to the future progresses we're trying to make?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually not going to be as big of a problem as you think it is. I mean, sure, you can't take somebody who is like making pizza for a living and then you're like, okay, you're a sushi chef now. Like, you need to train people. You can't just switch people over. So it's not anywhere near the same thing to have somebody go from working in the fossil fuel industry over to wind turbines. They're not the same. Your training doesn't translate. Okay. But at the same time, I think that I had a bigger point here. I promise I did, villain. But while you can't do that, I also think that people need to realize Kamala is not as liberal as Kamala She like really people like to think guys. She is like she's
progressive to a point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she's taking on some of the same policies that Biden had. And Biden has actually increased local oil production by a great margin. We're making more local oil and drilling more here than we ever have in our history.
We are the number one energy producer in the entire world. That's including Saudi Arabia, Venezuela. Just
everyone. But we're also the number one consumer. So of course we're reliant still on getting gas from overseas because everything that we're making, we're also like consuming. Yeah. We're exporting some of it, but at the same time, like Kamala is going to come into that same thing. Like she, in American politics, we have to remember when we say left, we actually mean center. And she's still going to be upholding fracking. Mm-hmm. Oil production is going to go up and their focus is going to be building new infrastructure, training new people for green jobs in the future while trying to double dip. They're going to want to make that money on oil and make that money on clean energy. They just want to make double the money. They're not going to try to like cut one out entirely. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a concern.
It really won't. It's going to create corporate jobs. And look, the corporate overlords who run America and every other industrialized nation, they're going to have to learn to adapt and build new infrastructures and new business models. It's really not going to be the American people's job to do that. But
and guess who's going to do that? The rich people. The rich people who are already rich in oil. Mm-hmm. Can take that money that they've made billions of dollars in their oil money and reinvest into being the energy leader for the next generation because they don't want to lose out on a market share. They have a monopoly in this oil right now. They want a monopoly in clean energy too. And they have the money to do it. They should be racing each other hand over fist trying to climb up a tower to be the first, the top, the only option when you think of clean energy. They should be the PG&E of wind turbines.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good, man. Well, so Kamala's policy number three, guys, drum roll, please, is criminal justice reform. Now, before we all start, a lot of people may know that my dad, my biological father, was convicted of a three strikes law by Reagan in the 1980s. He was the very first person to ever be criminalized for this law. He originally received 101 years to life in prison for simple narcotics possession and intent to distribute, blah, blah, blah. But later on in life, he got a presidential pardon from Obama. So criminal justice is at the heart of one of my, you know, core strings. But Kamala's got a plan for criminal justice reform, y'all. She's talking about reducing mandatory minimums and getting rid of cash bail, which is something she tried to do in California. It sounds good on paper, right? But what happens when the system can't tell the difference between nonviolent offenders and repeat offenders? What do you think about that, Chigazes?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? You're putting out the possibility of offenders being back on the street and reoffending. But at the same time, I think we have to really look at the fact that, like you said, there's so many crimes that are non-offending in terms of like violent crime versus drug crimes. And the way that we have definitely penalized people for quote unquote reoffending, like an addict who is caught with drugs on them three times, is treated the same as somebody who committed murder. Like it just doesn't make sense. They're not harming anyone but themselves.
Yeah,
but more importantly, like they're an addict. Like if you're gonna not be able to quit the first time, you're not gonna be able to quit the second time, the third time. Like of course you're reoffending. Right. But that's why we should not only just be reforming how we treat people when they're sentenced and when they're arraigned, and we need to be focusing on rehabilitation, reintegration into society. We need to go even further, if you ask me. If we look at some of the European countries where they have very low recidivism rates. The number one way they're able to do that is by literally having programs that trust them, put them on a little commune and ask them to grow their own food.
Yes.
Where in America, we make them grow our food using prison labor as slavery. Like it's very different approach.
And look, exactly. You're exactly right. I mean, it's like trying to fix a leaky faucet with duct tape. Sure, it might hold for a while, but eventually that water is going to spill out and go every place, you know, everywhere. So, but it's an interesting haul on thought processes. And to your point, in Finland, I believe it's either Finland or Sweden, when they imprison people in the prison there, there are no doors, there's no locks. They kind of come and go as they please. So they have the weekends off and then they come back to prison. Now, I believe they all have like ankle bracelets of some sort. And these are also people who've committed like grotesquely horrible crimes. So that's something to look into. I don't know if it works, but in Finland, their recidivism rate is extremely low, almost 0%. So
yeah, and I don't think we can go that far in America. Like, people are already afraid of, like you said, reform. And most Americans want to feel safe, and that's their priority, is protecting themselves and their families. So that's what makes criminal justice reform already a hard sell, is, like you said, they're worried people are going to be coming out en masse, and you're going to have murderers everywhere in the street. Or if you look at Trump's languages, how he already positions that everybody is a criminal coming in from overseas. And during the debate, you saw it multiple times, where it says crime is down worldwide because every country is sending their murderers to us, and our
crime is down here.
Yeah, no, bro. Crime is the lowest it's ever been here.
Yes.
So that's wrong. And also, like, that's kind of just all developed nations right now. Crime is going down across the world in general. Not because they're sending their criminals here, though. Just because people are more and more distracted and kind of stuck inside. I don't know what it is, but trying to sell that criminal justice reform scares people. And we've had a conversation in a past podcast episode about an obsession with safety that Americans have. And yes, it's good to be safe, but we fantasize about the opposite. You look at the true crime phenomenons and how focused people are on by not getting murdered. And even if it's not a reality most people will face, they're terrified of that. So it's hard to say, we're going to let people out of jails and they might murder you. It's a very hard sell.
It's a very hard sell. And I think that you're old enough to remember the first big time when we had what's called fear politics. Well, not the first big time, but back in the 2000s when, and I know we're really close to September 11th because it just passed and we memorialized those guys. But back in the early 2000s, George Bush used fear as a tactic to get us into two wars that lasted 20 years. Come to find out, there was nothing going on over there but the sand and the oil. So let's be
the Dixie Chicks
how
knew.
We get afraid of each other, and we allow people to use our worst fears against us. Because I think that, you know, candidate Trump is someone who does that very tactfully. Well, I mean, he's tactless, but in that aspect, very tactfully.
No, it's true. He goes into that fear because out of all the emotions that a human can feel, fear is the strongest emotion.
It's very strong.
And it's because it's tied to our survival. So if you are able to manipulate the way that people are afraid of a situation, you're able to manipulate how they act and how they respond. And he's very, very good at that. So that's, again, how we're going to have to balance this thing, is how do we use logic over emotional fear?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And and what I think that he knows that a lot of people don't know is you can be controlled by your fear. Like, for a long time, I had a fear of snakes, and I moved to Texas, and everybody's, oh, there's snakes everywhere. It's like Snake Island. There's watch your feet. I haven't seen a snake since I moved to Texas, and it's been on, what is it, since 2018. So don't let your fears wrangle you into making silly decisions. Actually, get
the only good thing that Greg Abbott ever did for Texas. Even the snakes don't want to be there because they hate him.
It's too hot. That's what it is. Okay. Well, Kamala's policy number four, education overhaul. And just so you guys know, when Donald Trump was first in office, he hired a little lady whose brother did run BlackRock. Her name is Betsy DeVos, or DeVos, or evil, whatever you want to say. This lady tried to disrupt all of education. She tried her best to dismantle the education system as we've known it. But Kamala's education plan is all about increasing funding for public schools and making community colleges free, which is great. But let's talk about the real world impact here. Schools can get all the money in the world, but if the system is broken down, it's like putting premium gas in the car with no wheels. Where are we going with all this energy and all this funding? What do you say? What do you think about that, Jagazis?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're exactly right. We can keep pumping money into the education system, right? Even though it's already one of the most well-funded places. I would say in terms of private schools, at least are one of the most well-funded institutions in America. But if the system itself is broken, pumping more money into it doesn't fix it. So we already are having issues. If you look across the board at children and school age kids, we are below
the majority of other countries when it comes to reading, when it comes to math, when it comes to critical thinking skills. We're teaching the wrong things. You can provide more books to the schools, but unless they do an entire overhaul on what it means to be schooled, we're not doing much good for anybody. We're just going to have a fancy building and kids still being left behind.
Ivory towers with no foundation. We love it.
And it's, we just really need an overall reform, not in the way the Republicans are talking about it, which you brought up Betsy DeVos.
Please.
you brought up Betsy DeVos and she was awful, but like, so Trump wants to get in there. He wants to take away all public funding and have private schools get the money that was going for public schools.
So that's
going to
be what's called the new Jim Crow segregation 2.0.
Exactly that. Exactly that. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, I think it's interesting that Betsy DeVos has turned against Trump. She is one of the over 200 former Trump board members and employees that have spoken out against him as being dangerous and not viable for the presidency.
He's unhinged. And
Mrs. Umbridge over here, if she can say that, and she literally wanted to take food away from school kids, that means he must be pretty bad. So,
I mean, if you're starving the future, what do you think we're going to live in? Like a whole bunch of, I don't even know how that even makes sense, but In his Project 2025, and no, Project 2025 is not a sponsor of this show. We're 110% against
it. I wish. We'd be rolling
catch,
in it.
Yeah, catch the sarcasm. So, but you're absolutely right. I think that there are ways to improve the educational system and keep it springing up new talent, you know, investing in new minds, the new ways of thinking. I mean, there's so many, and I know Elon Musk, who he wants to put on his board to revamp all of the government, says thinks that education is a waste of time, but someone had to educate him. So, I mean, look behind the mask, look behind the curtains. Who's pulling the strings and who's trying to? Education is something that's needed for people, so that if we had more people who thought past a sixth grade intelligence level, there wouldn't be so many things to explain. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, there's, I can't remember where it is. I don't know if it's California specific or if it's a federal thing, but they're looking at reforming their jobs as well to not require certain degrees anymore. Because how it stands currently, there's jobs that are considered entry-level jobs, but you still need a BA. You still need your bachelor's to even apply. So or like 4 years of it. But it's like, we all know, you and I know that you can be smart and not go to college.
Yeah, I went to college and did not finish.
Like this. There's a huge thing to be said about on-job training, life experience, common sense, and just because you are a BA of English does not mean you are now qualified to go run a warehouse logistically. It's weird that they're like, oh, you need 4 years of college even if you didn't study in this field at all. We just want to prove that you went to college. And so they're dropping that requirement federally for a lot of different positions. And I think that's a good thing. This is actually a Democrat-run thing. And I can't remember if federal or if it's just California, but they're trying to do that with government positions. And I think if we start framing things more like that, we'll be better off. And then have education focus more on trade-type skills. Set it up kind of like they do in England, where you have your regular levels, then your A levels, and then you can go to university if you want to. But more importantly, just fixing the way that we do all that is going to be more important. It will take money, but throwing money at it's not going to work. We need to restructure how we think about it and how we operate. Especially, like you said, the chips. They have the chips out. We have all these semiconductor facilities going in. And do you want to know the number one problem right now? Nobody is trained to work them.
Right. And we've been saying this since Obama. He's like, there's going to be future jobs that no one is trained to work right now. So we really got to get certified in things that are actually happening right now. And remember, that was 2016 when Obama was talking about this kind of stuff. Now, I recently saw a lady who has a double doctorate. That's two PhD degrees. And she's looking for a job. She can't find anybody who will hire her. The one job that came back to her, get this, $20 an hour, and they required that she had a doctorate.
No.
Yes. And she's like, there's no way in hell I'm going to waste all the time I put into two doctorates for $20 an hour. And I was like,
that's fast food money. McDonald's in California is required to pay $20 an hour. I would rather work at McDonald's and take on a high stress job after all the years and years of college. I'm sure she's in debt too. $20 an hour is like a slap in the face.
Yeah. Poor girl, poor lady. Well, I guess as a conclusion to our segment today, guys, the higher point today. So what have we learned today? Kamala's policies look good on the surface, but when you dig deeper, it feels like they're trying to solve today's problems with tomorrow's solutions. What do you think about that, Jagazes?
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, I think while the plan may work for some, I think that there's definitely some regular Americans who are going to miss out on the boat or, like I said, probably not be in the know. I think the hardest hurdle to get over is the education on these policies and telling people how it'll actually help them. And Democrats in general have been failing at that for a decade now. They have really good policies that do affect everyday Americans, and they have a terrible way at explaining it. So people think that they're still only supporting the top echelon or whatever people think. They just don't think that they're gonna thrive under Democratic leadership, which is the opposite. The economy does well.
Yeah,
everyone takes home more money. You see wages go up. Everyone's benefiting here. And if they had more leeway, not only with these policies, but if we're able to get a blue wave going in Congress where we can actually have the House and the Senate, we would be able to make change. We'd be able to reinstate that childhood tax credit. We'd be able to get free school lunches. I don't know if I'm hungry. But yeah, if we were able to have these policies of tomorrow while also getting the policies of today through Congress, I think that would be a perfect marriage between the two.
Well, and you guys, Jagazes makes a great point. You can't just elect the president. It starts at the very lowest chambers in the counties, the school superintendent, the county's council, whatever it is. You have to start low, and then we build high. Once you get to the president, you should have already marked all these candidates that you wanted. They're going to help progress your goals. But at the end of the day, guys, it's all about how these policies will affect you, the listener. Are they going to make your life better? Or are they just more promises that'll take years to deliver? It's up to you to get that out there and vote like you know what you're doing. Don't just vote because you like someone's theatrics or them talking about eating cats or whatever that guy's talking about. Don't do that. But what I would tell you is make sure you're registered to vote. I think the deadline's October, in some places, October 5th through the 15th. Early voting has already started. They're already sending out ballots in some of the other states. So at the end of the day, guys, be informed, be encouraged, and don't back down. This has been Let Me Take You Higher. I'm your host, Mr. Villain. For Jagazes, thanks, guys. We appreciate you coming back and listening to what we have to talk about. And you can reach Jagazes and see his platform on TikTok at Jagazes and on TikTok. So that's J-E-G-A-Y-S-U-S. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. Just like Jagazes, like Jesus with gay in the middle.
Yeah, I love it. All right, guys. Thank you for your time, and we're out.
Bye.
I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, "You're right, there ought to be a law." And he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until they decide to make me a law. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee. And I sit here and wait while a few key congressmen.
too?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. Most bills never even get this far. I hope they decide to report on me favorably, otherwise I may die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee. Oh, but it looks like I'm going well. Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well, then I'm off to the White House where I'll wait in a line with a lot of other bills for the president to sign. And if he signs me, then I'll be a law. I hope and pray that he will. But today I am still just a bill.
You mean even if the whole Congress says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yes, that's called a veto. If the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again, and by that time you're sold.
By that time, it's very unlikely that you become a law. It's not easy to become a law, is it?
No, but how I hope and pray that I will. But today, I am still just a bill.
Welcome back, darlings, to another edition of Kay Nicola's Hollywood Minute, where the glitz gets gritty and the glamour hides the gossip. I'm your host, Kay Nicola, and today we're diving headfirst into the latest Hollywood secrets, scandals, and so much more. Buckle up, because the tea is hot this week. First on our list, let's talk about certain two A-list actors who have been publicly BFFs for years. Well, behind closed doors, anyways. It seems they're more like frenemies. Word on the Hollywood Boulevard is that these two were locked in a serious behind-the-scenes power struggle over their shared production company. One of them wants out, but the other, let's just say they're holding the keys to a rather large vault of secrets. Stay tuned, because the battle is about to get very, very public. Now, unless you've been living under a Hollywood rock, you've probably heard about the epic steaming wars happening right now. But here's the scoop, they don't want you to know. Several streaming platforms are quietly battling over the same mega movie deal, a remake of iconic 80s film, Here's the Twist. One of those platforms already started filming, but another one is threatening to pull the rug from under the bigger budget. Chaos behind the scenes? Absolutely. But for us, it's pure entertainment. And then there's that beloved actor you know, the one who seems so deep down to earth, so squeaky clean. Well, apparently they've been living a double life, quietly moonlighting at a high-stakes power player in Las Vegas. Sources say they've been winning big, but losing just as in personal matters. A huge gambling debt has reportedly left their career on a shaky ground, and they might have to take some questionable roles to play it off. Who knew being on the screen was the riskiest bet? Oh, and let's not forget about one of the Hollywood's most talked about directors who currently under investigation, not for your typical Hollywood scandal, but for allegedly an entire film plot from an unknown indie writer. Turns out this little known writer has proof in the form of emails, and they're not backing down. This could be one of the biggest intellectual property lawsuits Hollywood has seen in years. And finally, in true Hollywood style, there is an unexpected comeback brewing for a 90s starlet who has been out of the limelight for nearly two decades. She's recently been spotted out on set, secret project in Europe. The insiders are whispering that this role might be her ticket back to the A-list. Could it be a Cinderella story in the making, or is this Scarlett's skeleton's derail and her return? Time will tell, but I am, for one, on the edge of my seat. Before we sign off, Hollywood and the world have lost a true titan on the screen today, the unmistakable voice of cinema, James Earl Jones, my apologies, has passed away behind an unparalleled legacy. His portrayal of Darth Vader, Mustafa, and countless iconic characters have transcended generations, forever embedding his powerful voice into the hearts of fans worldwide. His talent was larger than life, and through the world we may feel quieter without him. His work and presence will echo in Hollywood forever. Rest in peace, Mr. Jones. Your voice may be silent, but your legacy will never fade. And that's all for today for Kay Nicola's Hollywood Minute, where the secrets are juicy and the scandals are sizzling and the intrigue is never ending. Remember, and everything shines until the spotlight gets a little too close. Keep your eyes peeled, and we'll be back next week for more behind the scenes tea that will leave you gasping. Until then, keep it glamorous. And to the great James Earl Jones, thank you for your immeasurable contribution to the world's cinema. You will be missed and never forgotten.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. Big thanks to our special guests and a huge shout out to our incredible sponsors. You guys are literally the wind beneath our podcast wings. Remember, this show was dreamed up and brought to life by yours truly, Mr. Villain. And it's all made possible by BC Entertainment LLC, a proud subsidiary of Big Cheddar Music LLC. All rights are reserved by BC Entertainment, so don't even think about touching that dial without permission. Until next time, keep your minds elevated and your vibes higher. This is Mr. Villain signing off. Stay tuned, stay sharp, and stay forever gifted and lifted.
Unfold.